ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते
So today I would like to take the topic of compassion for this lecture. I think that's a very, very important topic for our life, and I will try to speak on that today. I would like to bring the ground of this lecture by a little reading from our Holy Scriptures and from particularly from Srimad Bhagavatam. That might be a little challenging to translate just for those few sentences because it's a reading, but you can try your best. Yeah. So it is from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, Verse 9. If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living entities and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated and imperishable. So that means that when one feels unhappy by seeing others in distress and feeling happy when they are happy, actually his religious principles are very strong. He's actually very well situated in his life. So our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada gave very beautiful comment on that particular verse. He's saying, in this verse, real religion principles are explained. Everyone should be unhappy to see others in distress and happy to see others happy. Atmavat sarma sarva bhuteshu. One should feel the happiness and distress of others as his own. It is on this basis that the Buddhist religious principles of non-violence, ahimsa parama dharma, is established. I think you are all well aware of the importance of ahimsa or non-violence in the Buddhist tradition that is actually coming here in the Vedic scriptures. We feel pain when someone disturbs us, and therefore we should not inflict pain upon other living beings. Lord Buddha's mission was to stop unnecessary animal killing, and therefore he preached that the greatest religious principle is non-violence. May I ask, who of you is a non-violent person? No one. So it was a good thematic for this lecture. It was good to speak on that. When I started my spiritual life, I was thinking, actually, I'm non-violent. I'm vegetarian, and I'm not beating anyone else on the head. So I'm actually non-violent. That was what I thought non-violence was. But when we read Bhagavad Gita, our founder Acharya gives a very deep meaning of what non-violence is. He's explaining that non-violence means to not agitate the mind of anyone. And when I read that, I understood, actually, I'm not yet non-violent. There is quite some work to be done to not agitate the mind of anyone else, any living entity. And just 2-3 sentences more I want to read, and then we will enter deep into this topic. A Vaishnava, or a devotee of the Lord, is truly a perfect person because he laments to see others unhappy. And he feels joy at seeing others happy. A Vaishnava is para-dukha-dukhi. He is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls in an unhappy state of materialism. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always busy preaching Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So this shows the quality of a saintly person, the quality of a sadhu. A sadhu sees that the mass of people engrossed in materialistic activities are actually having pain. And therefore, he wants to relieve them by giving them actually highest knowledge of how one can actually become happy. And this is very, very interesting, this conception that the sadhus or the saintly persons, when they see someone happy, they feel happiness, and when they see someone suffering, they feel suffering for them. Very often, for normal persons, it's come in the opposite. When we see someone suffering, we often tend to think that's his fault. He's now getting the fruits of his bad activities. He is getting his own karma. And we feel actually happy. I'm not suffering. He is suffering, but I am not. And when we see someone happy, we feel, oh, why? Why he has to be so happy, this guy? Why? Why am I not as happy as he? Hare Krishna Prabhu. Could you just correct a little bit the garland around Lord Nishingadev? Sorry, it's a little out of... But during the bhajan, I was all the time... It was just jumping in my eyes, this garland up and down. Sorry, that's a little out of topic. So this... Very often when the living entity has envy in his heart, then this perception of others' happiness and suffering will be perverted. But for one who do not feel envy toward others, then he can truly feel like others. When they are happy, he's happy for them. And when they are suffering, he's feeling suffering for them and wants actually to help them. And sometimes for those who have the understanding of the Vedic scriptures, who speak about karmic reaction, very often we tend to say, oh, this person is suffering because that's actually his karma. He's supposed to suffer. He did some bad activities and therefore he's suffering. But are we saying that if the person suffering are close persons to us? If they are our parents, of our dear friends, and we see them suffering, will we also say that's their karma? No. We will try to help them. We will actually feel for them. So this is the attitude of a person who has developed compassion in his heart. Whenever he sees someone suffering, he will not try to just hide it or just think, oh, that's his fault, that's his problem. But his heart will be moved and he will decide, let me try to help this person who is suffering. In one of our scriptures, the Nectar of Devotion, there is a description of what compassion means. In that book it is said that compassion means that a person is not able to bear the suffering of others. That's actually the definition of compassion. Another of our scriptures said that tenderness of heart When it is expressed toward other living entities, it is compassion. And when this tenderness of heart is turned toward the Lord, the Supreme Lord, this is actually bhakti. This is devotional service. And we know that for many, many people, the heart is not tender. The heart is very hard, like a stone. And in this society in which we are living, we are all pushed to be number one, to be the best, and we all tend to step on the toes of others to establish our own glories and our own superiorities. And therefore, because of that, our heart is becoming like a stone. And there is no tenderness of heart, nor toward living entities, nor toward God. So I think in the time we are living, it's very, very important to address this type of topic and hopefully pray for our heart to melt a little bit and become truly compassionate toward other living entities. As I was preparing this lecture, I was remembering a very nice very nice things that happened when I was in India traveling. One day I was with two friends, Madhvamuni and Kishori, one very nice couple from Serbia, and we were visiting the village of Anjan Loka. That's a very special village in the area of Lord Krishna's birthplace. And we were walking there, and suddenly we saw a village scene of India. There were 10 young boys who were encircling a younger one, and they were beating him. They were giving him a very hard time. And we saw that, and we were surprised, what is happening here? But immediately I was thinking, what can we do? We don't know what happened. We don't even know the language they speak. So let's just pass by. And the lady that was with us, Kishori, she just went to them and started to speak with her finger. And she was saying, not good, not good. Look, he's crying. Why you do that? And she started to chastise all the boys. And they all became so touched that a Western lady, a white lady, was now coming and telling them what they had to do. And they just all stopped their things and went away. I mean, very simple example. But I saw what a compassionate person. She did not just turn her eyes away and think that's their problem, but she immediately went and immediately did something. Months ago, I was traveling in Switzerland by train. And I happened to speak with one lady who was sitting in front of me, and we had a friendly discussion. She saw I was dressed as a monk, so she asked me questions about our tradition, and we had a nice exchange. And then she was telling me, but why is God letting people suffer? Why is it that people are suffering in this earth? And I think every one of you might have thought of that. If God is really good, why he allow suffering to be in this world? So I was telling this lady, see, God is trying his best to help people to be happy. He's sending so many different scriptures from so many different religions. He's sending priests, nuns, monks. He's sending from all the religion people who are there who try to help others to become conscious of him and go out of the sufferings. And I thought, now it's up to the people to take the help or to not take the help. It's up to them. And I was saying a little bit, there was a tinge of pride in my words, like, that's up to them. And she looked at me and she said, look, people are weak. Although there is so much help coming to them, people are very weak, and it's very difficult for them to take the proper decision to accept the help from others. And then I realized, my God, she looked like an ordinary person, and I am in the dress of a monk, but she is actually much more compassionate than I. And I felt very, very, very moved that actually when we see other suffering, we should not say they did not take the proper choice in their life, but we should actually pray for them. We should actually keep on trying to help others. Do you know that sometimes it is said that spiritual people are the most egoistic people? Did you ever heard that? They are thinking, I and God. That's it. That's all that counts. Everything else is actually not so important. And very often, spiritual people who are actually supposed to give the most essential help to the living entities are actually hiding in their own room and do not actually try to help others. That means they are just in the vertical relationship, but they did not yet develop the horizontal relationship toward all living entities. I was hearing one lecture from one of our masters. His name is Radhanath Swami, and he was speaking this lecture on one festival day. And on that festival day, it was Gopunim, for those of you who know, everyone had fasted until the evening. And then it was the last moment before we would eat, and he said, okay, now let's sing for the Lord. Let's make a big kirtan. Let's feast with the taste of the holy name. Everyone was very hungry. Oh, now we need to chant. And then Maharaj said, but not only let us try to feast with the holy name, but let's pray for everyone around us that they will be able to relish the nectar of the holy name. And I found so beautiful. Although we are all together, we are all here chanting, but most of the time we are just thinking in terms of me and God. And we are actually not praying or not seeing others around us and actually sending good wishes and seeing actually how we can help everyone who are around us to become actually more happy, to become actually more enlightened. The Lord is constantly giving blessings. He's constantly giving mercy to all of us. And if we engage those blessings and give it back to other people around us, then the blessings just continue flowing. It's like a cycle that is all the time coming. But when the blessings of the Lord are coming, if we take them for ourselves and try to put on our own bank account, then the blessings do not come anymore. Only when we learn to give back, to reinvest those blessings of God to other living entities, then those blessings are just coming and coming and coming again and again and again. And we have very much the examples of sadhus or gurus or those souls who are very advanced, who are self-realized. They are so dedicated to help others. Their life do not count anymore. And their service to God, it is to help every living entity to become truly happy. We have example of our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, who is sitting there on the Vyasasana. He was old. He had 70 years old. He was living in the spiritual world. He was living in Sri Vrindavan Dham. Where he was just, the whole atmosphere was just pervaded with love of God. He was just in the best place you could imagine. But just in order to help all of us, to help all living entity, at 70 years old, he just crossed the ocean and went to New York, to America, and started to try to give this transcendental consciousness to all living entities. This is compassion. Most of the sadhus will come to the West to beg. But he was going to the West to give. He was going to the West to give. I must see. Would you like someone else to translate? Can you?
Yes.
Yeah? Maybe Rasikacharya Prabhu, are you good to translate? No? Yeah. Thank you. You are really giving your best, but I see after sometimes it becomes a little difficult to keep on. We'll see if we get another. Thank you for doing. Five 500 years ago, in a small village of India called Navadvip, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared. Lord Sri Krishna appeared there in a hidden form, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And at that time, this village of India was full of opulences. You can still try until we get another one. This village was full of opulences, and people living there in India looked to have everything they needed. But actually, the devotees of the Lord were feeling a lot of compassion for them. How is that possible? Usually, we feel compassion for a person who is suffering. When we see someone suffering, the feeling of compassion is coming. But when you see people enjoying life, how is it you get a feeling of compassion? The devotees of the Lord, they feel compassion because they feel those people are actually wasting their life. They are actually going to die. They are actually going to become sick and have to end their life. And they are actually wasting the opportunity of a human body in sense gratification, in temporary happiness, which are actually not there to give the full satisfaction of the soul. Thank you. Adi Purusha Prabhu, our second translator. Thank you so much. Yeah, we have the corner here. This incarnation of the Lord had Mahaprabhu had different associates, and he would send those associates every day in the street. He would say, you go to these people who are suffering and you give them the message of God. And when they will come back in the evening, he will feel so anxious. He will ask, how many were able, or how many wanted to accept this message of peace. Maybe I need to shed a little more light in the words I'm saying now. It seems I'm losing a few of you. It's usually we value happiness according to comfort and according to facilities that we have in this material world. But most of the time, those facilities are actually giving some type of happiness to the body and to the mind. But they actually never touch deep into the soul. They're actually not giving the full satisfaction. And therefore, when the devotees of the Lord, they see that people do not get access to this fulfillment of the soul, then they have this compassionate feeling, and they think, let's help those people to receive this love of God, to receive this higher spiritual taste that is amrit, that is actually nectar of immortality. When one starts to walk on the path of spiritual life and experience this higher taste, experience this divine love taste, then there is no question then one immediately understands this is actually life. This is actually the life I'm searching for. But as long one do not experience this higher taste, then one is just trying to get it everywhere else, and therefore just is not able to reach this high level of happiness. So in this lecture I try actually to address a little bit everyone. I have different persons in this audience. I have some who are already practicing since many years our process. I have some who might not be practicing so much, so I try to reach a little bit everyone. I hope I will be successful. When I was in beginning of my, before I took up spiritual life, I always had desire to see a world happy. Anyone of you did not have this desire? I think everyone came across this point. I would like to see everyone happy. Why has everyone has to suffer in this world? Why is that? And if you speak with people, that's the ideal of everyone. I want to be happy in a happy world. That's everyone want that. When we were young, we would meet with friends and we would remake the world. We will speak of how the world should be. I think also you, many of you did so. But after some years, I understood I'm not going to change anything just by talking about it. If I want to really try to help the world, actually, I need to change myself. I cannot expect others to change, but I have the choice to change myself. And by changing myself, I can eventually get the strength to help others change themselves. And this is actually the point of taking spiritual life. It's not only the point of becoming happy ourselves, but at the same time to help others become happy. How can we be happy when we are all the time tormented by lust, by anger, by envy, by all those bad qualities that are in the hearts of everyone? As long as those enemies are in our heart, there's just no question of happiness. We are all the time tormented by those bad stuff which is in the heart of everyone. But by taking the process of spiritual life, one actually becomes purified. One actually is doing a proper cleaning and take all those bad stuff out, and then the transcendentalist can become actually a true lover, a real happy person, and then he can pervade this happiness around him and help others also to become pure souls full of love. So therefore I'm saying that to bring a little bit in the context compassion and the practice of spiritual life. There is a very famous kirtan singer. His name is Krishnadas. Maybe some of you knows him. He's not directly from our tradition. He's from another Indian tradition. He has another spiritual master. And his service is to do kirtan. He's going traveling and he's chanting the names of the Lord. And he is very good friend with my own spiritual master. So one day I had to drive him in the town of Munich. And I asked him a question. I said, Krishnadas, you are all the time chanting the same songs. Since years, all the time the same songs. How do you do to keep in track or to do your practice with inside, not in automatic way? How do you do? So he looked at me, he's from America, and he said, you want to know how I juice my practices? How I bring juice into my practices? And I say, yeah, that's actually what I want to know. How do you do that? And he said, I connect my practices with why am I making my practices? And he said, why am I chanting like this? Why do I do kirtan? I do that because people are suffering. And I'm actually doing that to help them. And in that way, I'm actually bringing some feelings into my spiritual practice. And we were driving in Munich and he was showing me the people around. He was saying, look this lady. Does she look happy? Look this man. Look, how is this man suffering? Look this one, look that one. He was just showing me everyone in the street. And you just could not see anyone with a smile. Just everyone was lost in his own small world of anxiety. So he was telling me, I'm juicing my practice, my understanding. I'm actually trying to help others to become really happy. So we are, most of us are engaged in spiritual practices. And just being here, you are actually doing spiritual practices. But are we connected? Our spiritual practice, our being here, are we connecting that into a higher dimension of helping others? What a responsibility do we have toward the world? We are actually chosen. We are actually chosen people. We are just by being here in the temple, we were invited by the Lord Himself. And we are chosen for what? We are chosen to help the entire world to become truly happy by developing our relationship with Him. And I would like to use this small moment of just bringing the awareness to us of our own responsibility we have. The responsibility we have to become truly happy people and to become able to give this happiness to everyone around us. To actually take over the world. To take over a suffering world and help this world to become truly happy. This is our responsibility. This is why the Lord brought us here. Because He wants to become truly happy people. And He wants us to be able to give this peace and this compassion to every living entity. What an amazing point of view. Huh? It's not so often we think from that perspective. How much my spiritual journey is important for others. So how are we going to do that? Now I'm sorry, I'm just giving you a new mission in life. I hope you are not angry at me. Basically, we need to become spiritually strong. We need to become enlivened. And how do we do that? We need nourishment. We need spiritual nourishment. One of our spiritual master, Kanamba Kanana Swami, was giving a very beautiful analogy. He was saying, in our spiritual life, we have different pipes of nourishment. We have one big pipe of nourishment called visiting the Holy Dhamma. We have another pipe, the chanting of the Holy Name. Another pipe, association with spiritually minded people. Another pipe, the reading of Holy Scriptures. All those are pipes of nourishment, of spiritual nourishment. And we should actually drink or eat from all of them. Not that we take just a little bit from one of them and not from the others. We should get full nourishment. We should get from all of them. And we should eventually check if those pipes of nourishment are clean and are actually able to provide us the nourishment, that they are actually not blocked. So in our tradition, or in whatever spiritual tradition you are close to, try to make sure you get enough nourishment through the scripture, through the prayer, through association with spiritually minded people. And then when you get enough nourishment, then you can start to shine. Then you can start to give it around you. I would like to end this lecture with a poem. A little poesy. It's always good. The sun is setting, slowly setting. The sun asks, when I'm gone, who will give light? The sun is setting, slowly setting. No answer. The sun asks again, I'm going, who will give light? Then one small candle answer, I will give light. Oh, said the sun, how much light can you give? The candle said, I will at least give a little light to one room for the whole night. The sun felt so happy. Great! Great! Please keep on shining. I'm coming back tomorrow morning. Can you imagine what this poem means? We had very great souls coming in this world. We had acharyas, we had great sadhus who were like the sun in this world. But now they are gone. And now they need candles. And who are those small candles? We are those small candles. And whatever we are able, we should shine. We should shine to our family members. We should shine to our friends. We should shine to our community. Whatever we are able to receive, whatever strengths we are receiving, we should become like those small candles and learn this art of shining transcendental knowledge to others who are around us. We should not be misers. We should not take all of that for ourselves. We should learn this art of giving it to others. There is a nice story of one sadhu who was practicing meditation in his cave. And he did that for many years. But after sometimes his meditation became dry. And he thought, to hell this meditation. I have enough now. Let me go down to the village and let me enjoy life. So he went down his cave and went down toward the village. And there he saw something amazing. There was a mouse who was trying to eat a stone. What's that? What is happening here? And then he noticed that a stone had fallen in front of some food. And now the mouse wanted to eat the food, but because the stone was in front of the food, the mouse wanted to take away the stone by eating the stone. So the sadhu thought, my God, what a determination. I should not give up my spiritual practice. So he moved the stone for the mouse to get his food, and he went back to the cave and continue doing meditation for years and years and years. And suddenly again he felt so dry that that's enough, to hell my meditation, let me go back to the village. And this time when he went down the village, he saw there was a dog who was dying, and he felt, oh my God, what a pity. And every living entity, when they die, they are very thirsty. So he thought, let me go to the river and bring some water to that dog. So he brought water to the dog, and the dog drank the whole water very fast. And he thought, my God, he's very thirsty. He went back to the river, brought more water. And when he came back to the dog transformed. the form of the dog transformed into a beautiful being who said, now you understand. Your whole reason of practicing is that you give to others, and then you will never become dry. You will never become hard-hearted. All the result of your practice are there for you to help other people. So in our tradition, we hear that the Lord is also very compassionate toward us. Until now, I was just speaking about how developing compassion toward others, but we hear that actually the Lord is very compassionate toward all living entities. And our Lord, his compassionate nature has an identity. And the compassionate nature of the Lord is called Shrimati Radharani. This is the consort, the eternal consort of the Lord, the feminine aspect of the Lord, which is actually very, very compassionate. And if we feel that we are fallen, if we feel that we need help, if we come to this humble position, then we should approach Shrimati Radharani to receive her compassion. And then we will be able to attain Lord Krishna. We cannot actually go directly to Lord Krishna or achieve Lord Krishna on our own. We need actually the compassion of his feminine energy, Shrimati Radharani. I would like to read just a few sentences describing the position of Shrimati Radharani from our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, instead of offering obeisances to Krishna directly, devotees offer obeisance to his compassionate nature. Actually, because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is very difficult to approach him. But the devotees, taking advantage of his compassionate nature, which is represented by Shrimati Radharani, always pray to her for Krishna's compassion. Shrimati Radharani, the tender-hearted female counterpart of Lord Krishna, represents his compassionate nature. Therefore, the spiritual master who compassionately appears in this material world for the sake of the fallen souls is considered a representative of Shrimati Radharani. That means the spiritual master or the great sadhus who are coming in this world, they are actually representing Shrimati Radharani and this compassionate nature of the Lord. By the mercy of the spiritual master, one can obtain the mercy of Krishna. There is no alternative means for success. There was once a man who was living in Haridwar, which is in the Himalayas. And one day, some bridge buses came on pilgrimage in Haridwar. Bridge buses are the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the birthplace of Lord Krishna. So they met this guide, this sadhu from Haridwar, and they say, why don't you come to Vrindavan? It's much nicer. You should come and visit Vrindavan. So this sadhu said, okay, why not? Let me go to Vrindavan and see what is this place of Lord Krishna. So he went there, and he felt the whole atmosphere was so sweet, so nice. But there was a problem. He was just getting purified. He was just getting diarrhea, sickness. He just, all the time he had problems. And he was really thinking, maybe I should go back to Haridwar. It's too intense here. And one day, he was taking his meal. He has his plate in front of him. And a young boy, 5 years old, came running by and took his plate away and left with the plate. That was too much for this advanced. That's the drop that make the vase pull over. I don't know if we say that also in English, but in French we have this expression too. So the sadhu said, that's enough. Let me go back to Haridwar. Now, Srimati Radharani had said that she did not want anyone to leave Vrindavan Dham being unsatisfied. And she saw, this man is going to leave Braj and he is unsatisfied. I have to do something for that man. So she sent some brahmana to him. And the brahmana said, no, don't leave. What is happening to you? Why are you so upset? So the brahmana explained the whole story and the final of the story with that boy who still is played. And the brahmana told him, you need to write a letter of complaint. And you should give this letter of complaint to Srimati Radharani. She is the boss. She is the energy of Lord Krishna. And she can make all arrangements. So the brahmana said, okay, let me try. So he took paper, pen, and started to write a letter of complaint. And then he started to ask the bridge passes, where is this Radharani? Where is Srimati Radharani? I have a letter for her. So the bridge passi said, you go to Vashana. Vashana is the place where Srimati Radharani lives. So the brahmana went to Vashana and was asking people, where is Radha? Where is Radharani? Everyone looked at him a little strange. He is looking for Radha. Nobody seemed to know where he could find her. The word was going around and happened to enter into the ears of Srimati Radharani herself. And she said to her companion, bring me back this man. I want to see this man. I want to read his letter of complaint. So one day, as this man was wandering about looking for Srimati Radharani, one of the close associates of Srimati Radharani, one Manjari, came and she said, I know where is Radharani. You please follow me. So they started to walk in the forest. And as they were walking in the forest, suddenly the man noticed that on the floor was gold. The path had been transformed into gold. And then he looked at the trees, and on the trees were sapphires, rubies, jewels for fruits. And he understood, I'm entering now in another dimension. I am actually entering into the spiritual dimension. He became excited and followed that guide. And then they enter into a place, we call that the Kunj. It's like a meadow in the forest. And there he saw the divine goddess, Srimati Radharani, sitting on a golden throne, with many maidservants around her. And then he saw that boy. He saw that boy who had stealed his plate, who was hiding behind the throne and was mentioning, don't tell. And when the brahmana saw that picture of that boy who was no one else than Lord Krishna himself, he just fainted. It was just too much. He just lost consciousness and fell on the ground. And when he woke up, everything had disappeared. Everything was gone. But one thing was sure, he did not want to leave Braj anymore. He was totally satisfied. So this is a little story of the compassionate nature of Srimati Radharani, and she is especially compassionate to anyone who come to her abode, to anyone who come to Vrindavan Dham and look for Krishna there. She's very, very compassionate. She never let anyone go out unsatisfied. So today we had a journey in the world of compassion, which was very much helping us to come out of our small little world in which we are the prisoner of our own ego. and try to learn to expand toward others and see how we can actually develop this compassion, how we can express this compassion toward others. I'm sure all around us we have many, many hundreds of people we can realize they are suffering and they need help. So the point of this lecture was a little bit to bring up this responsible feeling we should develop, to not let anyone in painful situation, to not let anyone suffer around us, and become bold, become serious, become active into the way of helping everyone to come out of sufferings. We heard that even with most comfortable situation in this material world, people are suffering. The soul is starving. The mind and body are getting some drops of water, like when you are in the desert, just some drops just cannot give any satisfaction. And the soul is starving for divine love. So it's actually our responsibility to become shining souls, to become like those candles. Remember this beautiful poetry. This is what we are meant to become. Small candle to give this light of Krishna consciousness to anyone who is around us, to give this light of knowledge, this understanding of how one can actually become truly happy. This is why we are here. This is our mission in the world, to become happy ourselves and help each other to become happy. This is a way of being compassionate toward others. So I will stop here. I don't know if you have any questions or any comments. This topic is giving something to the heart. Huh? We can feel it's something important. It's something I should actually not forget as soon as I'm out of the temple. It's something I should actually explore. It's something I should work on it. Something I should develop. So now the program continues. We will have a wonderful vegetarian feast for all of you. And the program continues on and on and on. On Sunday, nobody wants to go back home and think that the next day we have to work again. I mean, not for me, but... usually we have program. We have now the vegetarian feast. Then we will have a japa workshop that teaches how to chant the holy name, and after that we will have arati at 7 o'clock, from 7 to 8 o'clock, and from 8 to 9:30 we have a special after. We have Madhava Prabhu, who is very, very deep kirtan singer, and His Holiness Sachinandana Swami, who is my revered spiritual master. They will be here from 8 to 9:30 and they will lead kirtan. So if you also don't feel so attracted to go back home, please feel comfortable to stay with us as long as you like. Thank you for visiting our temple, and I hope you can take something with you and use it in your life. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.